Before we begin, I'm going to say the set-aside prayer. God, help me set aside everything I think I know about you, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your new truth and have a new spiritual experience every day. Especially today, help me carry your message. Amen. We've reached a part of the book where it says working with others, but actually as I study it, it's really how you, if you're new, how you should see things and what you need to do to get started with your first step. And then like Brian said last week, it has a lot of powerful stuff on how, if you're going to meet with someone, how do you share with them? And we got to the second time you go to see the person. Now I got to remember where it is. Here it is, page 96. And I will have the last week's up on the site soon. It was great. There's so much information in there. And, you know, when I had to do my talk Thursday, it brought back so many memories, and I was very emotional because it was so horrible. And I talked about my meeting Cliff Starbuck and how my life changed. And God had a plan for me that I didn't understand. And I think the only hope for me was when I decided that my plan was never going to work. And I gave up. And then immediately things have happened. And they still happen today. So if you're new, give up. Todd talked about it. Drop your rock. Keep dropping it. The set-aside prayer is really telling me to drop my rock today. Right now, whatever I think I know, let go of it. Open my idea to new ideas. The top of 96 I will review. I make fun of Jimmy, but he does a very good Friday meeting and he always reviews. So he's forgiven me. He reads the book at the noon meeting. It says, do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. Don't waste time on people who are not desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. Now notice with eagerness. And so many times we try to help people and we're more desperate than they are and we're more eager than they are. And if that's the case, you probably need to back off. Because I don't know about you, but alcoholics tend to be codependent and we tend to want to be people pleasers. So we tend to pursue people who to get them to like us, who are desperate enough and eager enough to have what we want. And so we waste time. And then, I don't know about you, but it brings back some of our character defects too. So we have to be very careful because it's important to work with other people. And it's going to talk about that today. But don't let it become something that's separating you from God. It should be a positive experience. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced and he cannot recover by himself. Well, how do you become convinced? Pain. Some people never become convinced. That's why very few people make it. Very few people ever get to AA, and very few people in AA stay sober 10 years. To spend too much time on anyone's situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. See, we have the power to direct people to a program of action that will make them have an opportunity to not only live, but be happy. We don't have the power, but we have the power to show them what we did. And we have to get, sometimes we have to remember, we don't have the power to give somebody recovery. We have the power to show them what we did, our experience, so that they can do it. Because we try to fix people. Anybody else try to do that ever? Yeah. And we do it because that's part of our personalities, but we have to stop and understand now we don't have that power. Suppose now you're making your second visit to the man. all that was the first visit. He has read this volume, you give him the book. So they thought the book was good. Now, I read this paragraph and I realized that they're writing this before the book went out. So they're talking about their experience before the book, but then with the book. I'll show you what I mean. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. That's a good thing to ask someone. And is he willing to go to any lengths to do that? How desperate is he? Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. So if you want to pick a sponsor, find somebody who's experienced the 12 steps. And now, who's experienced it out of the big book. You can give him practical advice. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story. But do not insist upon if he prefers to consult someone else. So if he wants to take the third step and do 4 and 5, you're available. But remember, this is before the book came out. I think once the book came out, I think people started going through the book with the person and going through the directions with them. But remember, when they wrote this, they didn't have the book. So they didn't know how it was going to be used. And that's why I did the site. Somebody wanted to do it, Matt B., who wanted me to record it. And then that lady who moved to Texas wanted me to record it. So we got a machine, and we didn't know what to do. And thank God Lal came here to sober up, and he is IT, and he showed me how to record, and then he made the WordPress site, and then Chris W., who doesn't come that often anymore, he made the site. And so if somebody's new and they want to listen to the book, you can listen to the whole book, me teach it, and if they don't like that, they don't have to. But it's helpful. I could not study the book on my own and learn it. I had read it many times, and I didn't understand it till Joe and Charlie. Reading it on your own, it's good, but you can read it in a group, but unless there's the message is taught, I think you miss something. It's like scripture. You can read scripture together, but you have to understand what they're actually saying, the context, and look at it line by line. I believe that. It's helped me. He may be broken homeless. We have that today. If he is, you might try to help him about getting a job. A job is a very good situation to look for if you don't have any money. Sometimes new people, you have to say, you know, you need maybe getting a job will help you get a place to live. And you may give them a little financial assistance, but I don't recommend too much of that because it's really hard to know. And they're going to talk here about how you work with somebody and what you some suggestions on what you do and what you don't do. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. The other thing is you shouldn't deprive your family of your time because you're so involved with other people. You still have responsibilities at home, and you still have responsibilities at work. Perhaps you'll want to take the man into your home for a few days, but be sure you use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. What are their motives? What is the person's motives? And because they may be using you. So it's very hard. It's very hard to know how to set those boundaries. Permit that and you only harm him, you see. It's very hard, and I think that's why you have to be careful when you're working with a new person, what's actually going on. You will be making it possible for him to be insincere and not expressing genuine feelings. So sometimes if we try to help the new person so much by doing these things, we don't allow them to hit their bottom and to really have the desperation to recover. So I wrote, to set boundaries, do not be codependent. people pleasing, and that's why a lot of alcoholics go to Al-Anon. It's very helpful. We're all codependent, and the Al-Anon program is really helpful for everyone. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. You can kill with kindness. And remember, the gift of desperation causes action. And if you take away their gift of desperation, you may be killing them. It's very hard. When my son died, and you know, he died and he wasn't living with us, and I wouldn't give him any money, and I wouldn't let him live in my house, of course, you know, I said, oh, he died because I didn't give him money and I didn't let him live in the house. But Patty said, you know, he could have died upstairs. And if you give him money, he would have gotten drugs. And he had money, and he had a place to live when he died. He was living with my ex-wife in Wichita. He wasn't on the street. Now, he did ask me once to come and give him money, and I told him to go to the mission. And his mother sent him money to come and see her and saved him. And I don't know that that made any difference either. And so when he died, I realized that I had no power. I could have died. Anybody in this room could have died. And we can't blame ourselves for people who are powerless. And I didn't have any power to fix anybody. I don't have it today, do I? No. I only have a power. I can't even fix myself. That's the other thing. I need God. God needs to direct my life and keep me on track. And so, but we're dealing with fatal illnesses here. I'll tell a story. I think it's sad, but kind of humorous from yesterday. This guy keeps calling me. He's desperate. He's a mess. He can't stay sober. For a couple days, I didn't answer his calls because he wants me to fix his life. And I knew he was talking to some other people. So I took the call yesterday. I was in a fit spiritual mood. And I said, I'll try to help him. I don't know what I can do. So he's calling, and he's trying to decide who his sponsor should be. But he's drinking. You get it? He's drinking, but he's trying to decide between me and Stu and somebody else. I said, I have a really good idea for you. I said, stop drinking and go to the hospital and drink on the way so your alcohol level's high enough, because he's had DTs and he's detoxed 3 times in the last year. I said, go to the hospital. Well, you know, it's really bad this time. He's going on and on. And, you know, Stu would be good or this and that. And I said, hello, you need to quit drinking. You need to go. And I said, to the effing hospital. And I said, and you have my permission to tell everybody in 3 months when you get your coin how I told you to go to the effing hospital. I didn't tell him he was going to die. I don't do that anymore. And he still argued with me. I said, listen, you're not to call anybody in the program till you're in the hospital. Because I wanted to save his life. Now, I don't know if he went or not. But I called Stuart. I said, so-and-so is trying to decide on his sponsor while he's still drinking. And it was so sad. And I don't know if he made it or not. I don't know if he's going to make it. He had a way to get to the hospital. I didn't need to pick him up and get there. So I don't know what happened. We'll see. We'll see if he comes back. I've been praying for him. And so he had a rock that he was carrying around. And he wasn't willing to let go of that rock. And it's really, the more you work with people, and Brian said last week, and we're going to read it today, It helps you remember where you are, and it keeps you in track. Brian was texting me about somebody we know and love who finally went to Valley Hope after struggling for the last couple years. And it's just, it keeps us on track. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Oh, here it is. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. Now, the foundation stone is the stone that everything sits on. It's the first stone put on. So why is helping others the foundation? Because if you're working with others, you're getting out of self. And it could be working with others in your house. It doesn't say alcoholics, does it? See, that's the other word. It's helping anybody, getting love and tolerance, getting out of yourself. And look at this, a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan every day. Wow, the Bible in the big book. Oh my God, call New York. I read from the Bible the other night, I'm sure somebody pissed off. We have a step for that, it's the fourth step. You know, if you piss somebody off, to the fourth step. Can I read the parable of the Good Samaritan? Mm-hmm. Does anybody really object to it? Because it really is powerful, and I've studied it, and it is the whole program. It says, this is in the Luke 10:25. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. This guy was going to test him. It doesn't matter whether you believe in Jesus or not. The story still has applicable. Teacher, and I'm not telling you you should believe or not. I'm just reading. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? He says, what is written in the law? He replied, how do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now remember, the big book on page 84 says love and tolerance is our code of living. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. But the teacher wanted to justify himself, and he wanted to know who was his neighbor, who he should love or not. And who is my neighbor? So in reply, he told the story. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving this man half dead. A priest happened to go down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side because the priest was afraid of getting defiled or that he would be somehow with somebody who was unclean or something. We don't know why, but he walked right by. Then a Levite, which was the chosen tribe, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. And then a Samaritan. Now the Samaritans were not respected in those days. They didn't follow the rules completely. They had their own interpretations, so they were kind of considered, you know. But as he traveled, he came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. There's a lesson in that. Where it says on page 67, when we're upset, we should ask God to give us love, kindness, tolerance, and pity toward anyone, because they're spiritually sick like us, right? And pity is a powerful word. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, and we want God to have pity on us, don't we? He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii, which was a lot of money in those days, and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. Wow. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? Jesus asked. The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. He said, go and do likewise. So who are our neighbors? Everybody is our neighbor. We're to love everyone as we love ourselves, and we love ourselves as in relationship to our love for God. So what he's really telling you in the story is that if you experience God's love, you will express that in your life. And we talk about love being the most important thing. Remember 1 Corinthians, I think 13, the chapter on love was something that they studied and they used in the big book. And so we want to be loving and kind to everyone all the time. And there's nobody that we should ever exclude. And so that's why justified anger is never appropriate for an alcoholic or a child of God. And we're all children of God. And the mercy that they're talking about is not, is and I listen to people, someone teach this, it's the love of God coming out through you. That's how it was written in the Old Testament. That's how they understood that word when he was teaching this. So should we do that to new people? Should we reach out our hand? I finished my talk with the idea of they asked John the Baptist what was going on with Jesus, and he talked about, you know, healing the blind, the lame, the lepers, and he said, and the poor have the good news preached to them. And remember, they called this book the Great News, right, for the world. And we're supposed to preach this great news to the poor in spirit, which is the alcoholic who's separated from God. So I got a lot out of that. I don't know if that makes sense. And so we should never say, well, he's not good enough, or we're not good, or we're too good, or they're not good. We're all child to God. But on the other hand, having said that, they're telling us to put limits on how far we go with people. It says, if need be, it may mean the loss of night's sleep, interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, trips to the court, sanitarium, blah, 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 blah. You see, it was a different world then. They didn't have treatment centers. They didn't have meetings. They were called by people who were desperate to come to help their alcoholic spouse. It says, occasionally you will have to meet such conditions. And I wrote, I need to have mercy, love, and tolerance for everyone. And I try to practice. I was meeting with Ryan this morning. We had that LPTKCC, love, patience, tolerance, kindness, considerateness, compassion. Now that's in the big book, actually. It's on page 83. It says, each morning you should ask for love, patience, kindness, and tolerance towards your family. Well, I use that meditation for everyone. I want to be that way to everyone, and I'm not. And I know when I'm not, because I'm disturbed, and then I have to say, well, there you go, Michael. How's that working for you? Let's be loving, kind, and tolerant. And then, like Stu quoted from that speaker, the only thing lacking in every situation is the love I don't bring into it. Think about it. You ever have a conversation with someone you're angry at? How's it go? You know, it gets worse. That's why it says we should never argue or retaliate when we're angry, because it just makes it worse. All right. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there's no reason why you should neglect his family. You should continue to be friendly to them. The family should be offered your way of life. Now remember, in the beginning, the families went to the meetings before the alcoholic did a lot. The wives would go. It was a different world. But our way of life will work for everyone. It's all the spiritual principles in the gospel. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there's a much better chance that the head of the family will recover. Well, they'll be kind and loving to him and maybe break down some of the barriers. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. The message here is practicing the spiritual principles will work for everyone. If everybody worked the steps, if everybody did step 4 and practiced step 10 and 11 every day, can you imagine what the world would be like? We wouldn't have CNN. There'd be no reason to have all the talk shows. Can you imagine how Twitter would change? Or I don't know what Twitter is, but I hear about it. Or any of these things would change if we would practice the principles in our world? For the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well. Notice that, able and willing. Well, who's not able and willing? Are you able and willing? You're not able if you're constitutionally incapable of being honest with yourself. You're not able if you can't see that you only have 2 doors. Go on to the bitter end and die, or get spiritual help. You're not able if you still have a plan. Give up your plan. And if you're able and you can see it, then you're willing to get well. How do you get willing to get well? You give up any plan you have on getting well yourself. And you're in total pain. Anybody with pain when you come in here? Anybody a lot of pain? The more pain, the better. But here's the thing. I've been doing this a long time. I've seen a lot of people in a lot of pain. And they cry and they hug me and oh. And they're so glad that they met me and they're so happy that they've got some help. And so I'll say, well, come Wednesday night at 6. Oh, I've got bingo, you know, or I've got the ball game. You see what I mean? It's the desperation has to be real. It has to be real. And why do people die? Because it says alcohol can take a lot of pain. We suffer a lot. And like the in the second step proposition, the doctor said the alcoholics a lot of times will just never give up. Their narcissistic personality, they won't give up. So anybody in this room that's sober, I think it's a gift. There's something happened to us that changed us from our being truly alcoholic to not, that made us even come here today. And so it's such a beginning when a new person comes to AA that we need to grab them and help them. It says, able and willing, if needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. First things first, get recovered, get a relationship with God, and then have God direct you how to get money and shelter. Follow God's will. Worry about seeking God first rather than things, right? And then the things will come to you because if God's directing you, he'll tell you to get a job. Before conquering alcohol or on the wrong track. And if you conquer alcohol, it's surprising what happens. People can talk about that. It's amazing what happens in your life. Yet we do go to such extremes to provide each other with these very things which when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it is not. Are you helping, here's what I wrote, are you helping a seeker or a user? What is the person's motive? Are they a true seeker? Or are they just going through to get the pressure off? A lot of people come here to get the pressure off, the wife, this and that. And that's okay, because if they come here, they may get the gift of desperation and see the truth about themselves so that they can seek the solution. I'll just read I talk too long. It's not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commenced to rely upon our assistance rather than God. And I'll start with that. Some people want to try to help so much, but then the alcoholic, they want to take over their lives. They want to manage them. They want to help them. No, we want the alcoholic to rely upon God. We can only help guide the path. We can't fix people's lives. Now, we can be helpful. We can give them a ride. We can give them direction, but we don't want them to depend on us, get dependent on us. We want them to get dependent on God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Sandy Beach tells the story. He needed money, and he needed more money, and he would go to the meetings, and they would tell him, read the big book and do the serenity prayer and work the steps, and he wouldn't know where the money step was. And they kept telling him the same thing and eventually realized that he had to work the steps and then the money would come. He'd get the job or whatever. Nonsense. Now here's a famous line. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. And I'll pick up with that next week. What a line. What are you dependent on? And that's why I talk about relationships with new people. They want to go back into a relationship that was dysfunctional, and then they become dependent on that person instead of dependent upon God. And what does dependence on God, people versus God, look like? And I'll pick up with that next week. Sorry I talked a little long or blabbered, but you'll forgive me. Thank you, guys.